Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I don't know how to do it. So this is, I can tell people this. Yesterday, Wilbon and I yesterday were doing the show, and at one point they say, Tony's microphone just went out. It's out. We can't hear him. I could see you. I could hear you. You couldn't hear me. Mike Foss, who is basically in charge of all sort of on-site things for ESPN, was in my house, and he fixed it. There is no chance on earth that if this happens again and I'm here alone, that I can fix it. I can't fix anything.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. It's a whole new world, and everybody knows it's a whole new world, but I mean in terms of this podcast. We have set something up. I just heard myself for the first time having done a few podcasts, and I was doing them on the phone. Now I'm not doing them on the phone. I'm doing them in front of a microphone. Sean has figured out how to make this thing work. I am still in my house, but the clarity of my voice is probably a lot better. I heard the rejoin music for the first time. I was flying blind on the last few shows, had no idea what was going on, as Nigel was either in the studio or in his house. Now he can hear me and I can hear him, and Sean, our engineer, is on the line. And so it's possible, at least, that I can have a sense. I mean, I'm still isolated, but I have a sense maybe that people can hear me. How does the quality of the sound, Nigel, how is it in your ear?
It sounds, your voice sounds a little low to me.
Really?
Not like low volume, like bass ear. Like
I don't know. Well,
now.
Sean can make that work. I don't know. And if I have a new sounding voice, maybe it'll get me voiceover work. So that would be good. That would be good.
Right, it would be good.
I wanted to say nobody likes to hear me complain, so I'm just going to complain about this one. It's not even a complaint. It's just one small thing. We have a couple of sort of kind of cherry trees in the backyard that bloomed within the last couple of weeks and were very beautiful. And then the blossoms, they're not actual cherry trees, but the blossoms get knocked down. And so they're all over the backyard. They're all over every place that I walk. I bring them into the house on whatever shoes I'm wearing, which is mostly sneakers. I bring them in. And as they dry off my feet or off the dog, they fall down. They fall down all over the house. I don't really need to do online exercising because I spend most of the day bending down to pick up these cherry blossoms and throw them out. I feel like if there's ever a call for a new kind of job, picking up cherry blossoms in someone's house, I have a shot at that. Because I'm good at it now. I can get four or five at a time. And I'm constantly bending over, which is probably pretty good because there's no pain attached at the end of it. I wanted to shout out to a few people first and foremost who listen all the time. Peter Barron, Jody Forstadt, Mark Shepard, Peter Lazarus, Finn, of course, of Pineapple Landscaping. So shouting out to them. And now I bring on my son, who I haven't talked to in a couple of days, and who is in South Carolina. And Michael Kornheiser is always on this show, except when we do shows like this where I'm essentially the only person on the show. And we reach out to the people with whom there is familiarity, not just for me, but for everybody who is listening. So I get to talk to my boy on the air, who's in South Carolina with his wife's family. How is South Carolina?
South Carolina is beautiful. I'm watching the sun almost fully up in the sky. But before we get to South Carolina,
yeah.
This open that you just started with is everything I miss about the show. You call those complaints, I call that ratings. So thank you.
Okay. Well, you know, cherry blossom all over the house all the time. What your golf is open. And it's interesting. Golf is closed in Maryland. The governor said, no, not even public courses, all closed. Golf is open in Virginia. Golf, as Wilbon tells me all the time, is open in Arizona. Golf is open in South Carolina?
It is open, but it's open with restrictions. So since we've been down here, there are no rakes on the golf course. So after you splash out, kindly, you know, kick your splash mark with your feet.
Right.
They are recommending that you take a golf cart by yourself. The staff is working overtime to make sure each golf cart is sanitized after every single use. So golf is open, and I think it's, at least in the community where we are, it's very important to obviously the economy down here, but to morale. But it doesn't feel like your casual weekend afternoon round. It really is something to do. You're obviously putting with the flag sticks in. It's you feel like you're just checking off the box. So I'm grateful to have some outlet because, you know, you're just squeezing out nine holes late in the afternoon before dinner after, you know, working with the boys, and everyone down here has various phone calls. So we are grateful to have that, but it does not feel as light as it might sound to you as you're cooped up in the backyard.
Well, but I mean, you're young and strong, so you, given your opportunities and choices, you would carry your bag around anyway. You don't really need a golf cart, and golf is something, people, I miss it tremendously, and I just miss having something to do and walking around and getting in and out of the cart, and it's sort of a natural circumstance for social distancing. The only time you're really close, physically close to anybody, or have to be, is usually on the green, and you can separate yourself when you putt. It strikes me, I'm not a doctor, well, I'm not that kind of doctor, but it strikes me that of all the recreational activities, golf is something that is good, and I understand why courses are closed, but I imagine you are feeling the benefit of them being open.
I am, and we've had sort of an early summer down here, so in some ways, it's this distraction, but it's also a way to just try and reframe our own thoughts as to what's changing about the world. What's so great about this community is that it really is a natural sanctuary. It's an Audubon Society community, and you have these wonderful walking paths. Right now I'm looking at the beautiful Okeechobee River that is at low tide, and so you're seeing people, whether it's out on the golf cart, they're driving to or from around, they're driving out to the docks. There are just natural spaces to distance ourselves while still trying to maintain some connection, you know, with friends and neighbors. So I'm really grateful that golf course is still open. I worry that every day it's going to shut down. Frankly, you know, you're just waiting to hear one case of yesterday afternoon in the 12-1 time frame when you were on the course. Someone went home and, you know, had started to feel symptoms, and we're recommending that everyone who was playing or on that side of the golf course sort of self-quarantine just to make sure everyone's okay.
There is, well, that, I mean, obviously that can, does, will happen everywhere. Dr. Brix went on TV yesterday. I watched it. And this morning on the Today Show said that no community will be spared, no major metropolitan city, no rural area. Everybody is going to see this. You do have lesser population density in South Carolina, and particularly where you are. I would imagine it's not that hard to stay away from people. I know I find myself, because I'm walking all the time, I walk across the street. I mean, I avoid people. They avoid me. Most people do that. And when like a group of two or three people starts walking right at you or behind you, you want to say, hey, back up. What are you, nuts? But I just go into the street. Does the lower population density have an effect on you psychologically?
I would say yes. When we are in the sort of safety of the compound, which is these gated communities where, you know, you really aren't just, you're not seeing that many people. But
yeah.
Do you remember when we went to Bethany Beach in the early 90s?
Sure, when there was Hurricane Bob.
Yeah, and you went, the only time in my life I've ever seen you get big and go into protector dad mode was when you would pace the front of the house waiting for the storm to hit.
Yeah.
And really, I don't have much to do other than help out with the boys, and so dinner has become my job, my sort of focus. And with that comes going to the Publix, and we've always talked about how great the Publix are.
Big wide aisles, love Publix.
So it's so easy to separate, but then I'm looking at the other shoppers, and this happens to be, you know, this general area of the Low Country in South Carolina, right outside of Hilton Head, you have an older population.
Sure.
So since we've been down here, my big worry is, so we came down before the general exodus from these, what I would call the Northeast Corridor, the Wilbon territories of people trying to flee to their second homes. So I don't want to be the case of the young person who, say, fled D.C., didn't have any symptoms, and then lo and behold is patient zero down for this entire region. So when we first got down here, people were definitely more hesitant to follow some of the guidelines, and they were definitely under the belief that, hey, this is more seasonal, or hey, we are just far enough away that this is going to stay away from us. But that's obviously changed in the last week. It's easy to try and put some of those fear on hold until you end up going to the Publix and you're facing down shelves and you're looking at, say, that couple across from you and you're trying to wonder, oh, when the store is restricting you to one packet of toilet paper and one packet of Kleenex or paper towels, like, is there anything that we could maybe do to ensure that you don't have to come back here tomorrow when they get their next shipment? Because I would like that population staying home. And you read all these stories about, you know, getaway communities, beach communities that are seeing such an influx in out-of-season guests, whether it is just visitors or whether it is people who own second homes. And you just wonder about our responsibility. It's not just to flee to make ourselves feel good, but it's trying to protect, you know, these areas that don't necessarily have the same resources or don't feel the same surge that they might in other times of the year.
How do you deal? I assume that Bootsy and the Hammer, well, the Hammer's certainly way too young, but Bootsy has cognition at this point. Are there any, I wouldn't think he would have any fears. He's with his parents, he's with his grandparents, he's with his relatives. I would think he'd be okay. I think he's probably too young to have fears about this.
He has no fears. The Bootster is living his best possible life. And frankly, good. I know he's been a real comfort for all of us, just how happy he is every day to scoot. And one of the big things, you look at the D.C. neighborhoods. We're in town. We own a house that is very walkable. But as soon as they shut down the parks and the fields, you just start looking at your cramped space and go, well, I need to get a toddler out to run. I need him to try and have some sense of schedule and a little bit of freedom. So, no, he's loving the fact that he can hit bang golf balls in the back of the house and try and cross the path into the river. He's scooting. He is in a big Berenstain Bears book phase for all you millennial parents out there who remember those from your childhood. So he's seeing everybody. He is splashing around in a little safety pool. And honestly, the most peaceful time of day is when you get quiet moments with him and he says, I love you, or he gives you a hug. And it really is a reminder that that you can have some control.
I miss him. I miss them. I miss everybody. I'm sitting here in dining room in an attic. That's my life, the dining room in the attic.
His preschool is trying to set up all these digital, you know, landscapes for the kids to interact with each other. Yeah, and frankly, this is just so parents don't come back and complain about lost to it. I mean, it's so great for him to see his teachers, and I'm finding out all the dirt on what his teachers are actually allowing him to say in school. But opening day, he's in there in his Juan Soto t-shirt. He is pitching and catching. And to him, it doesn't matter if opening day is, you know, the opening day at home and everyone's watching sort of separately. It was his opening day, and he was the look on his face as I gave him, again, we're trying to stockpile small toys you can play with in the yard. He got a new Rawlings web glove, and I told him this is the same model Max Scherzer uses, and he just stared at it in disbelief and just paraded around the house.
This is such an interesting thing that you would say, because Max Scherzer is somebody that you like a lot, and so you pass that on to your child. As I was doing one of my 10,000 walks yesterday, somebody was out in his yard with a baseball glove throwing to his kid, probably a guy 40 years old, 40 to 45. His kid's probably 5 or 6 years old. They're out in the front yard and they're throwing. And the guy recognizes me and he says, this glove I've got, my dad got it for me. It's a Mel Stottlemyre glove. Well, you got to be of a certain age to know that Mel Stottlemyre was at one point with the Yankees in the late 60s and 70s or so, before he became the pitching coach, was their number one pitcher. And probably between the time of Whitey Ford and Ron Guidry, he was the number one pitcher, Mel Stottlemyre. And that is the passage of baseball, right, Michael? That's the I pass it to you, you pass it to Bootsy.
So you probably don't remember this. You have an old Wilson. I think it's an old A2000 model that's in your armoire upstairs.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking about that ever since Walker's, you know, been walking and talking and picking up a ball and throwing. And I am looking forward to sending that out. And you can send it out to specialists who will take the stitching out. They'll recondition the leather. They'll put in, you know, new boarding in place. And I'm sort of hoping then that becomes just a cool Kornheiser heirloom that the boys get to hold on to.
Very, very cool. Very cool. All right, I love you and I miss you. I hope to see you soon.
Can I just say, I've been waiting for this phone call for the last week and a half, and if somehow you called up Chris Saliza before you called up your own son, we would have had real issues, and I would stay down here past Easter.
No, I was just, I mean, I didn't want to bother you. I mean, I wanted to make sure that you were not bothered by these phone calls, or I would put you on every single day. Plus, it's sort of a one-on-one until now. Now, Nigel, you can hear all this, right?
I can.
Okay, so that's good. So we have a sense. So the building of the community you know, one step at a time continues. Thank you, Michael. I love you. I'll talk to you soon.
I'll see you soon, Dad.
Michael Kornheiser, boys and girls, makes me very happy to say that. Makes me very happy to hear his voice. I don't want him to get angry at me. It's the last thing on earth I want. We will take a break, and there's no reason for him to, except that I could have said something incredibly antagonistic, because that's the nature of who I am. We'll take a break. When we come back, it's Wilbon, right? Nigel Wilbon joins us when we return.
That's right, from the compound in Arizona.
All right. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Go and See read. This is to try to get you to watch, or listen to, rather, the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. And a lot of the literature that they send me says to, you know, make this read my own and tell people about Malcolm Gladwell and his curiosity and this and the other thing. Look, he worked at the Washington Post. All right, he worked at the Washington Post. I've seen his books. I've seen him on television. I'm very proud that he's somebody that I knew. I don't know that he would recognize me. I suspect he would. I don't know that for a fact. He's really great pals with Remnick, of whom I am also extraordinarily proud. There's a whole bunch of people far younger than I that worked at the Washington Post with real talent, and Malcolm Gladwell is one of them. And this podcast is produced by the team behind Revisionist History. Go and See is a 6-part series focused on Lexis and the philosophy of Genchi Genbutsu, which means go and see for yourself. It's an idea that stems from the belief that if you create something yourself, you have a better understanding of people and how to create something for them. In the series, Lexis invites Gladwell to Japan to discover their unconventional thinking and processes firsthand. And you can find out how a Japanese tea ceremony influenced the engineering of a car window, how the sound of an engine is tuned like a musical composition to elicit certain emotions, how understanding samurai warriors' eyes led to a suspension innovation. Gladwell learns that no detail is left behind and that a car company can learn more about cars by studying people. I'll just go off script and say that what Gladwell has, what everybody who's good in the old era of newspapers has and had, is natural curiosity. It's as simple as that. They say, why did this happen? And they let the people who understand it explain it. Go inside Lexus's headquarters in Japan, ride along on a top secret test track with a master driver, sit in the expertly designed seat that actually lowers to welcome you into the vehicle. And I guarantee you, Gladwell will say, wow, how'd you do that? Why'd you do that? Follow Gladwell on his journey wherever you like to listen. It's all available now. Visit Lexus.com/curiosity for more stories like these.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Quiet nights, strange days, cancel your plans, clean your slate. I just been staring at the walls, and I say the walls have been very good company.
This is Brother Josephus. This is a quarantine anthem. If you go to, if you have friends, I mean, like, I don't even do social media, but friends always send you things about, I don't know, everybody writing songs about this and singing songs about this, many of which are very funny, all of which are charming and touching. And Brother Josephus, we appreciate very much. Nigel, just tell people how they can send music. Continue to send music, if you could.
Oh, yes, please. Yes, you can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. And we request that it's actually, if you're in the band,
Don't send us Beatles songs, please.
Unless it's Paul McCartney. I'm sorry, you know. Sir Paul. Then please send it in.
All right, Michael Wilbon joins us now. We had a week last week where we could go and do truncated PTI segments, and we had stories every single day. And then I looked at the paper today, and I looked, Wilbon, it's way too early for you in Arizona, but I looked at the early Sports Center, the overnight Sports Center, and they were leading with interviews. So there's like almost nothing out there. There's free agency, maybe, if somebody signs. There's the draft, but it's still a few weeks away. There's what do you see out there? What do you see?
The same thing as you, nothing.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I said to you, Tony, we're talking about something that's going to take months. And we had some news for a couple of weeks
the first of which we talked about on social media, the second of which we talked about essentially on SportsCenter.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, no, there's not going to be any of that. There's weird little stuff that's even smaller. I mean, there's a simulated, a no-touch hockey game here, and somebody's coming out with a big three tournament there, and people will try to do things to get attention, and they may get it.
Yeah.
Because there's so little stuff, inventory, that they may get it, Tony, but this is no surprise to me that, you know, not going to be Tom Brady. Tom Brady can't sign every day.
I take it back. God, I'm not signing with Tampa Bay.
That was the most overreported thing in the history of information.
So I look at the I pick up the Post, and when there's no headline that makes any sense and they've tucked the sports section back in the style section, pages 8 to 10, you know you're in trouble. So I look at the Digest. I look at, you know, the Roundup. And the only thing they have is various people declaring for the NBA or WNBA draft, people I've actually never heard of. And the reason I've never heard of them, and I'm sure you will feel the same way, is that the college basketball season this year, because nobody was great and because number one teams kept getting knocked off, and there was like no, I don't know, I was waiting for the tournament to sort of lead me into the college basketball season. So the names of the people who have declared for the draft, I honestly don't know who they are.
And you wouldn't have known anyway. I mean, like, you had March Madness last year and you still didn't know. We didn't know. This is Tony, they're one and done. They're people who now go proceed someplace they don't want to go to school. I mean, we weren't going to have known these people anyway. But you're outlining, by the way, a problem facing college basketball whenever it returns, is that by the time we get rid of the Super Bowl and the NBA All-Star week and the news that often generates, the college basketball had turned into about a five-week sport.
Yes, it really has.
6 weeks. Anyway, really having has. Nothing to do with the conditions of the world.
That
was the condition of college basketball that it was facing. I've been saying that for a few years, Tony, that I love college basketball. I start making myself watch a week at some point in January because it was reduced to so little time on the big stage. And to lose it all this year, it's just a millionth sad, sad thing about what's going on.
So I had Michael on at the beginning of the show, my son, who I hadn't talked to in a while, and was happy to hear that in South Carolina he can carry a bag or even get in a cart by himself. There's no sharing of carts. Arizona is still largely open, and you can play golf. What are the restrictions?
If it's a family member, you can ride in the same cart.
Oh.
So twice last week when I took Matthew out, the two of us were in a cart.
Okay.
Yesterday, I played with two friends, and we each had a three people, three carts. We had that yesterday, and there were no restrictions. Don't touch. Act sick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we played, and the business was sort of brisk. I asked a starter, you know, how many people we got today at this particular course. I think he said 300 or something.
Wow.
And so, yeah, let's tell you, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. And that's the same situation today. That's going to be interesting this week here because we're going to turn from the spring here, the winter here was so wet that it looks like Brazil instead of Phoenix. You know, instead of the desert, instead of the Sonoran Desert. It doesn't look like that because everywhere is so much water.
So there's green.
It's just green.
Right.
And it was cooler. And that ended yesterday. Yesterday was a nice day, but it wasn't the desert. It was cloudless in 68. We go for the big numbers, you know, starting today, really. Not the big numbers, but nice numbers. 80s. Coming up, like, really tomorrow. And I don't know what it's going to be like. I mean, Tony, the big difference, and I did spend the first few days of this, the social media, I started it in Washington. And Washington's not New York, but it's close enough to know what the hell's going on, 200 miles to the northeast. And Tony, it's very, very, very different. Just the feel of being in on I-95 and the feeling of being out here. The stress level, and look, we're stressed about the same sets of things worldwide. But Tony, the stress level here ain't nowhere near what it is in New York. And at New York, we know. Even Washington, I was talking to my dear friend Jan Greenberg of CBS last night, who covers the Supreme Court. And Jan was just like, what's it like? You know, what is it like where you are? And I was telling her, and she's like, are you kidding me? Tony, we don't have, like, I mean, so far still, you go to the grocery store and you get what you want. You get what you want. I went in Target one night because I've never been in a Target. Well, at once, I think I've been in a Target. I went to Target, which I could walk to from my house. It's so close out here. And I went in at 7:15. It closed at 8. And, you know, it was empty. And, you know, the grocery store part was empty. And, you know, I mean, it's affecting us all no matter where. And people are, the cases are reported. I think there are 11 deaths here. Now, you know, it's not like nobody knows what the coronavirus is here. Everybody knows. But it's not like it is back there. It's a different animal. It reminds me, I was in San Diego initially. I was in San Diego the morning of 9/11. And then I stayed in L.A. because I had to. Couldn't leave. And I stayed out there for 4 or 5 days until the first flights, cross-country flights, operated, and I was on the first one from L.A. to Dallas. And it kind of reminds me of that, Tom. I mean, you're talking about a national upheaval, a national jolt. But it wasn't the same in Southern California as it was when I got home to Washington.
Oh, sure. Well, because they weren't physically attacked. Sure.
Exactly. And this, Tony, while there is a physical attack, it ain't the same. And
well,
so,
it's, yeah, lesser population density.
And we don't know. We don't know what's coming. It could be the same. It could be. Yeah. It's not going to be the same. It could be more similar. Who knows? In 3 days, I hope it's not.
Right.
But it's. And I don't know what Michael's finding in South Carolina. Is he still in South Carolina?
He's in South Carolina, and it's a good place for him and the boys to be. It's good because of the lower population density and the difference.
Of course, same thing here.
Even if everybody is as anxious, there are fewer people around who are as anxious. You know what I'm curious about? Matthew's sixth grade now, right? Or about to go into seventh grade, right?
Yeah, sixth grade, yeah.
Is he doing his school? Is obviously closed. All schools in America, nobody's going back. The people who think you're going back to school, stop. You're not going back to school.
Yeah, you're not going back.
Is he doing online stuff? Is there some sense of schoolwork? Has Cheryl put away time in the day?
Here's the sense of it. It's 5 a.m. Pacific time. Matthew and Cheryl are in class right now on Zoom or something. And he's right now, because it's 8 o'clock back east, and they're still having...
Okay.
So he's got... I think he starts at 5:30 a.m. here. So you talk about a face on somebody. And I part of me thought, you know what, this is good. You know?
Yeah.
I went to him last night before he went to bed. He didn't go to bed and see he couldn't be on Xbox. I didn't hear screams. I didn't hear shrill screams from a Madden game at like, you know, midnight where he's playing with his buddies back home, back in DC. And I said, hey, do me a favor. I said, you gotta handle this pretty well. There's no whining because school is going to be convened at 5:30. Get up and do it. Get up and do it.
Good for him.
And
good
so
for you.
Spring break was, well, I don't know if good yet for him, but
well,
you know,
good.
Spring break was last week, and so there was nothing. And I thought there was another, well, the Easter week. So that's like what, next week or so, week after next?
2 weeks.
But this week, he's in school, and he's in school on East Coast time while we're in Arizona. And I think we didn't know that was coming. I don't think it would have prevented us from coming out here anyway. But he's got to rock and roll with some different punches. It's like, dude, the good news is you're done at noon. So just, you know, and you can go to Xbox then. Just do it.
So we'll get you out of here on this, the notion that we talk about all the time, the when factor. When do we think we'll have sports, and what will they look like?
I mean, I don't know. I have, you know, I thought about that very little last week, this past week. Very, very infrequently did I think of it even, or put that in my head. It was interesting because I was on radio in San Francisco with Ray Rattle, actually, Tony, on Friday. And they played a clip for me where Kirk Herbstreit said they didn't believe. Yeah.
No football. Yeah.
And I'm thinking, at first I'm thinking, this is insane. And I'm like, well, you know what? Kirk Herbstreit went to a university that has experts. And he has access to them. He has access to experts that aren't at Ohio State, his alma mater anyway. But I'm thinking, you know what? It ain't like Herbstreit just went out there and said something. You know, he talks to people, and he's got experts at his disposal. And he's hearing that from someone he trusts enough to go on the air and say that. And I'm like, wow, I hadn't really considered that. But I'm not guessing. I'm not playing that game. I never really thought. I always thought we were looking at June, July, or July, August, more importantly, July, August. And so I see these reports occasionally where, you know, oh, the NBA is considering this. Maybe he's not considering anything. They're considering anything just because they have to. That's somebody's job. But the notion that there's going to be some sports in, like, May, it's like, dude, what are you talking about? And so I haven't subscribed yet to what Kirk was saying. Tony, end of summer is the best scenario that I see, listening to people still talk about the state of this country and the state of the world. And so, but I'm not playing that game. I'm trying to stay in the moment. Tony, I told you I went to Target, which was new for me. I did something that everybody listening to you, and by everybody, I mean 98% of the people, and I did it for the first time. I, like, found Netflix on a smart TV
it.
I didn't know was a smart TV.
I don't have Netflix.
You don't know that, Tony. You might have it. I thought I didn't have it either.
It's certainly possible that I have it. But
and
I don't
the Amazon
know.
Prime and Hulu.
Yeah,
I found these things in my house on my television sets.
So you're watching.
And so I start watching, exposing myself to things that are brand new for me. So, look. Right now, I got golf. I got walks outside. The hiking trails are open here, although I'm not really still recovering from this foot thing. Not really allowed to do that yet.
Yeah, you're not a hiker.
So I'm trying to do other things. I'm not just sitting around. I don't turn on TV going, what's on ESPN? I mean, I kind of know what's on.
Nothing
right now.
Nothing is on ESPN.
You know what, Tony? I did like it when they showed, like, they had a Cubs day. And I don't know how many other. You know, they had Kerry Wood's 20 strikeout game.
Oh, that was the day they had all the pitchers on. Yeah, they had Scherzer on for 20 and Randy Johnson and Roger Clemens. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, and I didn't watch much of it. I watched a little bit of Kerry Wood's.
Yeah, Michael was at the game when Scherzer had 20. Michael went to that game just by chance. Just by chance. All right. All right, so I will see you of a sort later on in the day, and we will do what we do. Talk to you then.
We'll do what we do and see how it evolves. Thanks much. Be safe.
You too. Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we will take a break. Chris Saliza will join us when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the DoorDash ad. Between never-ending laundry cycles and incoming emails, you've got plenty on your to-do list. Give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. Continue supporting restaurants in your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurant on DoorDash. And this is easy. I mean, you don't want to have to go someplace. Let somebody bring it to you. Right. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. You open the DoorDash app, you choose what you want to eat, and your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the United States, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities we operate in safe. And right now, listeners to this high-quality podcast can get $5 off your first order of $15 or more and zero delivery fees for the first month. Wow. When you download the DoorDash app and you enter the code TONY5, that's $5 off your first order, zero delivery fees for a month. When you download the DoorDash app in the App Store, you enter the code TONY5. Use the code, people. Don't be stupid. Use the code. Don't forget, that's code TONY5 for $5 off your first order with DoorDash.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Layla, obviously, by Eric Clapton. If the Temptations bass line is the most famous introduction in rock, this is probably second. Everybody knows these lines, the guitar lines that Eric Clapton plays. I think joined by George Harrison, Nigel, at some point. Do they both play together on this, or am I making that up?
No, you're making that up. It's actually okay. Duane Allman plays together with him on this.
Okay, okay. All right, and so, but it's very, very famous. Why are we playing it?
Well, it's Eric Clapton's 75th birthday today, and George Harrison is somewhat involved in this because this was part of the time
Patty
when
Boyd.
Clapton was in love with Patty Boyd, Harrison's
George
wife.
Harrison's wife.
Yeah, and he wrote dicey. This sort of a love song for her, and dicey. Then, of course, ended up marrying her later on.
Very dicey. George Harrison had written something to Patty Boyd. Patty Boyd must have been great. I mean, come on, everybody. Yeah. If everybody fell in love with Patty Boyd must have been great. All right. Chris Saliza joins us now. And as we continue to try and get film familiarity in this podcast, these attempts to bring people a certain stability. And I am stopped on a regular basis and thanked. You don't have to thank me, but, you know, the attempt to do the podcast makes people happy. If they're listeners to begin with, it makes them happy that we even try. I stayed away from politics and I stayed away from the president for all of the beginning of this particular podcast with Michael Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon, but I'm not staying away with Chris Saliza. I watched last night. I watched probably, I don't know, 70, 80 minutes.
Oh, so you got through the first half.
It was long. I watched a lot of it and I'm not doing this to say gotcha. There's no point in me doing this. But the person who was delivering the news that we were going to be isolated and social distance ourselves for at least the next 32 days is the same person who said we've got this totally under control less than a month ago, and it's not under control. And I watched earlier in the day, and I was watching CNN, your network, Chris, when Jake Tapper was interviewing Anthony Fauci, and I heard Anthony Fauci say the estimate was between 100,000 and 200,000 deaths in the United States of America, and I audibly gasped.
So did I.
I gasped.
Millions of cases and 100 to 200. He initially said 100 to 200,000 cases, which
he
I
came
thought,
back.
Oh, okay,
no,
well,
he meant
sure.
deaths.
And he was like, oh, I mean deaths.
He
Wait,
said
what?
Deaths.
Yes.
This is a guy who I have friends who trained under him and believe that he's the best doctor in the world. There's nobody who has said anything about Anthony Fauci other than he's great, and he used those numbers, and I gasped watching that live, and they never backed away from him all day long. They didn't. In fact, they said it could go much, much higher into the millions if we did not practice the methodology that Donald Trump endorsed last night. What is your job is news. What were you thinking when you saw that, and is this working? Will it work?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know this, and Nigel knows this, that I was a fan of the show before I was on the show, so I too appreciate you doing the shows, because I was I was cleaning my car last week and listening to the show, so thank you. But I don't think that people understand. I think people probably have gotten too far away from their math classes and, you know, junior high and high school about exponential growth. So, yeah, it's not that much in the beginning, right? one, two, four, eight. The problem is when it starts to get big, it gets big really fast. And I think that's what you've seen. You've seen, you know, deaths go from 1,000 to 2,000 really rapidly. You've seen cases go, you know, in New York City in particular, but broadly, cases in the United States. Now we have the most cases in the world by a decent chunk. I think we're at like 141,000. Given those numbers, you mentioned this in the beginning, given those numbers, it would have been insane for Trump to push for that. You know, he said, we're going to fill the church pews on April 12th, Easter Sunday. That would have been, by any projection, would have not made any sense. It would have put people who may have the virus around, it would have, you know, surged things again. And is it working or not? We don't know, other than we look at places like Washington State, Tony, where they started doing this earlier, and it appears that their cases are leveling out a little bit. It's terrifying.
It is.
I think when you, it's so funny you mentioned the Fauci thing, because I was, you saw it. I was watching it on Twitter, of course. And when I saw it, I read it like three times to make sure that I read it right. Because, I mean, that's a lot of people. Obviously, the 2,500, you know, I'm roughly around that, who have passed away already in the United States is a lot. But 100 or 200,000 deaths. I mean, I'll remind people, you know, 3,000-ish people died on September 11th. I mean, you're talking literally exponentially larger amounts than that. I mean,
Chris,
it's terrifying. That's the word I keep coming back to.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give the sports analogy. That's the Los Angeles Coliseum and everybody's dead. It's an unbelievable, and that's only 100,000. It's an unbelievable sum of people to sort of be casually talked about like that. And I just thought, wow, they didn't have that in China. They didn't have that in South Korea. Did they get out in front of this far before we did? I don't even want to start blaming people, but when I watch Bill de Blasio on TV say, I'm not here to talk about the past and what I said in the past, like Mark McGuire, he'd go, hey, big boy, hey, how about a little responsibility here?
Well, but also the past was like a week and a half ago for Bill de Blasio. It's like, you know, it's not like we're talking about 10 years ago. I went back after I saw the Fauci quote, and I went back and looked at the numbers, and, you know, China had 80-something thousand cases roughly around there and 3,300 deaths. And I remember, I mean, because we were in studio at the time talking about this, the coverage was like, it is raging across China. Hospitals are overwhelmed, people are dying. And the China comparison is not like, you know, when we compare to Spain or Italy, smaller population countries, you know, over a billion people live in China. So, you know, in theory, they would, if it was roughly similar, they would have more cases and more deaths. So I don't understand it totally. I'm not trying to blame either, but we definitely had some notice of this. It didn't originate here, right? We were talking about it on cruise ships and stuff for 2 months before it came here. So, I don't totally, I have been stunned at that number, and I continue to sort of be stunned by that number.
I will just say that when I watch these briefings, and I watch Fauci, and I watch Dr. Deborah Brix, as scary as what they say is, I have confidence in them. I do. Me personally. I would like everybody to listen to them, though I don't know that they are, and I don't know that that's possible. Let me get off this, because it just makes everybody crazy. But let me get to something of a real sense in terms of politics. This is an election year.
Yep.
It's very possible that we're still going to be in our houses on election day. How do people vote in primaries? How do people go to conventions? This is so different and so strange. Nobody's postponing the election. This is not the Olympics, kids. Nobody is postponing this, I wouldn't think.
Well,
how do we function?
Yeah, well, so let's go through quickly. It'd be very, people are worried, right, that Trump, There's been some talk, well, what if Trump uses this to postpone the or cancel the election? And I've written about this. It's extremely difficult to do. You can postpone a primary because it's just a party-run thing. There's
That's
a
right.
constitutional requirement. The general election is in the Constitution. In order to change it, the president, you can't do it by executive order. You can't. Actually, it's in the federal statute. It's not in the Constitution, but it's a federal law. In order to change it, Congress would have to change it. The president can't just say, "Okay, we're canceling this." And I can't really imagine that this Congress is going to change Election Day. Primaries, New York just yesterday pushed theirs to June 28th. It was supposed to be April 28th. You've basically seen every state, with the exception, unless they've done it over the weekend and I missed it, of Hawaii and Alaska, they vote in April, and I don't think they've changed it. But every other state has pushed it back until at least June. Some states are trying to move to vote by mail exclusively. The problem with that is if you're not a vote by mail, heavily vote by mail state, it's hard to just go from 5 or 10% to 100%. You have to have primaries at some point because you have to have nominees for the general election that we just said you can't postpone. I'm very skeptical that we will have national party conventions. In the traditional sense, you know, big gatherings in Milwaukee.
How can you do that?
Now, Trump insists that they will have theirs. Theirs is in August. The Republicans is in August. The Democrats, I think, is in July. Maybe, but I mean, you know, Trump insisted that April 12th was his goal for us to start ending this social distancing practices. So, I mean, he's not someone who, when he says something, you put a marker on it and it's going to happen. I don't see necessarily why you would do anything that you could do with less people with more people. Do you know what I mean? Like all the way through the fall and maybe beyond. I just don't know why you would gather tens of thousands of people purposely in anywhere if you could figure out a way to not do so. Now, that second part is a big deal, if you could figure out a way to not do so. I'm sure they could figure out a way to nominate the two presidential nominees without the sort of, you know, the pomp and circumstance of the national conventions. But I'm skeptical that I'm going to those places and that they're going to be in anything close to an approximation of what they have been in the past.
No, okay, I'm not going to be a doomsdayer. I'm not going to say it'll never get back to what we had, because I believe that the smartest minds in the world will come up with a vaccine, as they have for other things in the past, and eventually things will be what people remember, but it's not going to be by June. It's not.
Tony, even if, like, let's say in June the administration announces that they've done the testing and they have the virus contained and we've seen deaths and cases fade over April and May. If somebody says, "Oh, hey, we're having a big broadcaster summit, Tony, do you want to come?" I mean, like, forget the medical piece of it, the psychological piece. I'm not in the business of going to these things and even shaking hands and stuff like that. I mean, I think that you will see, now maybe 5 years from now, people won't think of it. If there's a, you know, you go, you get your coronavirus vaccine, you get your flu shot, you won't think of it. But my gosh, I mean, in the next year or two, until there is a pretty close to foolproof vaccine, I don't see that stuff change. And that doesn't mean that we're not going to go back to work, doesn't mean we're not going to do the show, doesn't mean, but I tell you what, I mean, I was already aware of, as you know and most people know, you know, we were both pretty aware of illness and hypochondria. I mean, this will change the way in which not just people like you and I behave, but I think the way in which most people behave and think about going into large groups, think about touching doorknobs, think about shaking hands, think about all that stuff. How could it not?
Has to. And by the way, cruise ships over.
I mean, there's just a zero. When I still over. See, I mean, it's like we went on a hike yesterday and I saw, we were walking out near the Potomac and like four planes flew overhead. And one of my kids said, they're still flying planes? And I thought, yeah, they are, but I don't know why in the hell you would go on one. I mean, it's like, that's not as bad as a cruise ship, but to me at this point, it's like, what would compel, other than a, you know, a pressing medical situation, you know, you need to go see someone, or it's a job or some job requirement, why would you ever go on a plane and certainly get on a cruise at this point?
No, it's back to the 1930s, and everybody's going to take their cars. That's it.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to take their cars. All right, Chris, stay well. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey,
I appreciate
thank
it.
You. I'm glad everyone there is well, and please keep doing the podcast as much as you can, because it's a great it's a great joy for me to listen to when I'm sitting, you know, day 80, sitting at my house trying to entertain my children.
Certainly try. Chris and Liza, boys and girls, we will take a break. We do have a jingle, and we do have some email that Nigel dropped off at the house yesterday, for which I am grateful. And I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the TurboTax ad. You're going to have more time this year, I guess, to do your taxes. I guess the deadline will have been extended a little bit past April 15th, so everybody can do their own taxes. And I'll read the copy. People do amazing things every day, so it makes no sense that they shouldn't feel confident about doing their taxes. TurboTax believes with the right tools and encouragement, people can do anything. Yes, even taxes. And with TurboTax Live, you even have access to CPAs and EAs on demand who are available to answer your questions or to give advice on how to file, even on nights and weekends. So you can do your taxes with ease and confidence and never feel stuck or alone during the tax process. You can also rest assured that you'll get your best possible outcome, which means you can file your taxes quickly and easily and get back to all those amazing things people do every day. In my case now, it is walk. That's what I do. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's so fabulous. It's so stirring. It's the University of Missouri Marching Band, and they're playing the theme. That'll do it for us today. But before we go, I would like to thank Senator and Mrs. Blutarsky for the continued support of this show. Let me also thank today's guests, Michael Kornheiser, Michael Wilbon, Chris Saliza. Thanks to today's sponsors, DoorDash, TurboTax, and the new podcast, Go and See, hosted by Malcolm Gladwell. And remember that you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Radio.com. If you get the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. In the front room, looking at me, staring at me, is my dog, Chessie, who has been there for about 8 minutes, wondering what in God's name am I doing. Nigel, you want to thank some people?
I do indeed. I want to, first of all, thank the folks at Clyde's in Friendship Heights for helping us out this past weekend, getting some of the equipment we needed. And they're open for takeout. So please stop by and go there. And also to Danny and the crew at Bethesda Bagels at 4819 Bethesda Avenue. They provide us with the bagels every morning we do the show, and we love them. And they're also open, so stop by.
Some email. Tom Busanich, 65 and hiding in Colorado Springs. Let me add my thanks to you for keeping the podcast going. It's a bit of normalcy in these precarious times, and as always, a great entertainment for my daily walk. Your closing reference the other day to Apollonia's driving lesson reminded me of my David Aldridge moment related to The Godfather. I was attending the Colorado Shakespeare Festival in Boulder in the 70s, when to my surprise I found myself side by side in the restroom with John Marley, the actor who played Jack Waltz, the studio head who denied Johnny Fontaine his movie deal and ended up with his stud horse's head on his bed. Marley's daughter was a troop member, Macbeth in my recollection, and he was evidently in town to see her. As I glanced his way, I realized he was great as Waltz, but he was no cartoon. From Lauren Coulter, dear Ambassador Ron, as I rattle around my empty workplace, all my colleagues working from home, and I watch my 401k slowly bleed, I find solace in things that make life feel a little normal. While you may question the value of doing the podcast when sports are shuttered and toilet paper is now harder to find than my car keys, many of us welcome the familiar voices and rituals. While the world crumbles around us, the show truly stinks more than ever. Keep it up. And we will try. Twice a week, we will try. Tim Creve, Fort Collins, Colorado. With no active sports going on, ESPN's website has gone back to the 80s to report Aussie rules football results. Mr. Ron, can you believe that Gold Coast got shut out in the fourth? The Suns didn't even get behind against Port Power. I know you're going to be talking about that one. Or if you prefer, in lieu of a show, the various littles could call you at home and discuss what's going on in their lives and update you on our personal situations. I just know deep down inside this is the kind of show that you live for. By the way, if littles want to, like, email us and talk about their lives, what they're doing now, happy to it. Happy to read it. Happy to talk about it. Happy. Greg Brown. Hi, Tony. Greg, 51, lucky to be healthy and working from home here in the Midwest city of Toronto. I've canceled my upcoming trip to Chatter due to border closing. So can I ask that you keep doing these podcasts during these social distancing times? Hearing your voice along with your guests is a welcome touch of normal during abnormal times. Patrick Keenest in Columbus, Ohio. When I used to listen to you in the early 2000s, you were on ESPN Radio. I lost track when you moved on from that platform or got fired. During 2019, I decided to seek out your podcast as a humorous bomb to the societal and political kookiness of our time. After I reconnected, your pod became part of my daily routine. I began to share the pod with a woman to whom I'm related by marriage. When you and your guests began discussing the wonderful world of cruise ships and ocean cruises, your cruise ship discussion coincided with us planning to take a cruise for the first time in our lives. We were taking this cruise to celebrate our 25th anniversary. Don't be alarmed. We were going to take a Viking River cruise. The specific cruise was a wine cruise through France's Bordeaux region. The cruise was scheduled from March 21 to March 28. At one point, I asked my wife if she would be open to us sending the pod daily updates while we were on the cruise. As you may have guessed, we're not on a cruise and we're not in France. But we are drinking wine, still planning on celebrating our 25th, and I continue to look forward to, and I am thankful when I find a new Tony K podcast. Your pod is a treat. It does help during this time. Finally, since I've showered a bunch of Blarney on you, while it is not a great glass of wine in the French countryside, could you please wish Emily Caldwell from The Ohio State University a happy 25th anniversary? Along with our Beagles, Henry and Carrie, we will raise our glasses to Chessie on March 25th. So that happened already, right? That happened already. Good. From yes. Mary Judkins. Tell Tony to please put Chessie on camera on the PTI show from his attic. I'm sure I'm not the only one who would love to see her. Yes, but Mike Foss, who's running it, wouldn't love to see her. Wouldn't love to see her crash into everything and knock down the lights in the camera. From Jared Schofer in Washington, D.C. I've been a loyal little for around 8 years now. And you and I have even met at the Palm a couple of times. I want to say thanks for what you said on the pod about how you feel bad for people who had weddings planned around this time. My fiance and I are two of those people. Our wedding was all set for March 28th in D.C., but the world had other plans. Of course, I was going to invite you and the gang, even put you at a table with Lee Smith, Larry David, and a girl who doesn't like to get her bicycle wet. Thanks for all the entertainment you've been providing during this time. You'll definitely be invited to our rescheduled wedding, which is happening, oh, I don't know. No, I seriously don't know. If you're out on your bike time, as always, do wear white.
You know, they all get involved, and they all got their gear already, and so they're going to be all colored up in the maroon and black and yellow.
Strange days, cancel your plans, clean your slate. I just been staring at the walls, and I say the walls have been very good company. And all the people stay behind their door when there ain't no place open and got nowhere to go. Well, Mr. Virus, please, won't you leave us alone and then don't you come back no more. Fever breaks and the light turns green. Let's all meet there down in New Orleans when it's over. Oh, when it's over. From Miami Beach to Santa Fe, Waikiki, East LA. Getting tested in a biblical way in a brand new USA. And in the silent streets of a New York town, Chicago and Philly, ain't nobody around. And where there once was music, there just ain't no sound. And I just can't take it no more. But when the fever breaks and the light turns green, let's all meet back down in New Orleans when it's over. Oh, when it's over. I just miss you more than you could. could know. I've been pacing the floor. But the sun will shine someday and we'll be happy once again. London town, Paris, France, south of Spain, where all the shut-ins dance and they're singing from the back of me in old Milan. So hold on, just hold on. And for Timbuktu down to Tokyo, Kathmandu to the shores of Rio, it got the whole wild world in its chokehold. But hold on, yes, hold on, just hold on. 'Cause when this fever breaks and that light turns